Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Hi, listeners. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I wanted to make sure you all listened to the July 31st episode with Stephen Davis, the founder of the Nikki Watch technology. As you would have heard, he has been so generous as to gift a watch to one of my listeners. So you'll want to be sure to get into this amazing drawing. If you'd like to enter to win a free Nikki watch, you'll need to follow and like my podcast and email me your name and phone number to limeandbeyondwithtanya@gmail.com. Be sure and enter as you may just be the lucky winner. I will be doing the drawing on my September 11th episode, so be sure to listen in and see if I announce your name. As always, thank you so much for being such dedicated listeners. It's your support that allows me to continue to produce these episodes full of hope and inspiration. And today, my guest, Dr. Amy Offit, is a medical doctor trained specifically in integrative medicine. So we're not going to have a Lyme journey story, so to say, like we normally do, but she's got some great information to share. She's also the president of ILADS. So for most of the listeners out there probably are very familiar with that. It's the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. It's a fantastic resource, and it's a really great place for many to go, but especially if it's kind of a new little journey for you, right? It just gives you different ways to where you can navigate, where you can find information. So we're going to kind of dive into that too and, you know, what you guys can expect to find from that and what resources can be helpful for you. So we're going to kind of talk about a few different things today. So I'm super excited that you're joining me today, Dr. Offit. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tanya, for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. So I know that ILADS was a big name in my head when I first got my diagnosis, you know, because many of us takes years to get, right? Like we're sick forever and then we have Lyme disease. Okay, well, what is Lyme disease? Like, where do we go? Where do we search? What do we do? And so I remember that was one of the things that popped up a lot for us. And so since you are the president of ILADS, I mean, what better person to get the information from, right? So If you could kind of dive in and talk a little bit about, you know, what it is that you do, what they offer. And maybe also if you want to even just start with why you chose this Lyme route? Like, why was it? Is it a passion for you? Did you have a loved one with it? Or just kind of take us down that journey, if you would.
Of course. So first, ILADS, you mentioned, is the International Lyme and Associated Diseases Society, and it's been around about 25 years. It was founded by a very courageous group of doctors and researchers and academic people who wanted to do better than what was already happening for patients who had developed this chronic suffering disease, with which you're all too familiar. They just realized that they could probably have more resources if they collaborated together, forming this organization. And also at that time, it was even more so going against kind of the conventional approach to these types of cases. And I think that was what really unified the people that were founding ILADS. And of course, in all the early years, the group was fairly small, but smart. Like so many smart pioneers have gone before me in this field and continue to focus on what's going on with the patients rather than what's going on with other people's opinions or policies or approaches. I think that's what really drew me in to be a part of ILADS, is I saw there was a strong focus on patient outcomes and helping patients get better when patients have lost hope, lost their health, lost their energy. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. So I loved getting to be a part of that. And what took me personally in that direction was really what also drew me into integrative medicine. I always wanted to be a well-rounded sort of country doctor, like my doctor growing up. And when I started to practice that way, I practiced at a small 33-bed rural hospital here in Texas. And I loved my patients. I loved my job. I loved, you know, that I had the opportunity to help so many people. But I started having these gaps in understanding what was wrong with patients, which is a really unsettling feeling for someone who's gone to school, you know, to medical school and in 3 years of residency and try to learn as much as possible to help the patients that I was planning to serve. I would have a, you know, 40-year-old lady sitting in front of me saying she didn't feel well, she didn't know what was wrong with her. I'd already worked her up, you know, three ways, three different sets of labs, a couple of specialty referrals, and looked down and she's on five or six medications for, you know, insomnia, arthritis, depression, digestive issues, you know, birth control. She's like the same prescriptions were in place for quite a few people. And a lot of them were starting to just say, I just don't feel good. And I don't know why. And I didn't know why either. And so that just drove me to go back to school. So even though I'd been out a little while, I started going back to classes. And I eventually left that corporate kind of, even though it was a small hospital system, it was still run by pretty strong administrative guidelines that were somewhat restrictive. And so I went back to school. I learned more. I got a bigger toolbox and then moved out of that practice into my own practice. And it was very good timing, even though like I didn't have Lyme. I have three children. My middle son developed psoriasis when he was four, and I didn't end up actually diagnosing him and treating him for Lyme disease specifically, but he did have Bartonella. And when he was treated properly for that, the psoriasis went away. So I think that it wasn't psoriasis. I mean, I think autoimmune diseases usually have a trigger that we're not always looking for. And I'm not saying all psoriasis is caused by Bartonella. I don't want that to be a takeaway message as much as that we should all be looking for background infection when we have any patient that's got some sort of chronic autoimmune or chronic long-suffering condition. So that's what really, it wasn't his illness that led me away. I was already thankfully on the path of learning a different approach, but that certainly amplified my intensity to learn more and learn it quicker.
Yeah, you know, and that's can be a rough topic for us that battle with Lyme, right? Like we, and you use the keyword that I use a lot, toolbox, right? So we get these doctors that, you know, go through their medical school, do their residency, all of this stuff. And then, like you said, you come up against patients where you're like, okay, everything looks good on paper, right? And you even look good, but the patient's telling me something's wrong. And so, you know, for a lot of years, I had a real bitter taste in my mouth for all traditional doctors, right? But I had to kind of stop and just evaluate things, right? Like, I think that these doctors, I mean, there's what, like one chapter of nutrition in their, you know, textbooks. I think it's all of what you have in your toolbox, right? Like, if they've never been taught it, if they don't know it, we can't really judge them for not having those tools in the toolbox. But the flip side of that is be a doctor like you, right? Listen to your patients and acknowledge them and believe them and go around and figure out what is wrong with them. And that's exactly what you did. And I think that that's just incredible, right? Like kudos to you, because here you spend all this time, you obviously have, you know, this passionate heart that wants to help people that are not well, and you're trying to do your job and you realize, okay, I need more information because what I know now is not fixing all the people. And so I love that story. I love why you're doing what you're doing. And trust me when I say all these listeners out there, I'm sure appreciate you as well, because we just want a doctor. If they don't know, they don't know, but don't dismiss us and don't gaslight us, right? And that's what we get. And that is what is not okay. So.
Well, I think, you know, if you were to look at the membership of ILADS, there's so much uniqueness there. Like there's such diverse backgrounds. Like we have all kinds of different practitioners from different types of training in different geographic locations. We have some members in Europe. And what makes us all have something in common is that I think everyone is looking for better tools to help patients with long suffering. So that's what brings us together over and over and over again. And, you know, like, I don't have room on my schedule to treat all the patients that need treatment. So really, I look at the opportunity to be a part of ILADS as a way to build a bigger network. So what I hope for, and what I would ask of anybody listening, if you know a doctor that has a compassionate heart but doesn't have the knowledge to treat patients who have these types of conditions, I would love to connect with that doctor. Like, I can't help every patient. I wish I could, but it's just, you know, there's only so much that one of us can do.
Right.
But if I can connect with, you know, one doctor at a time, we do physician training, we have educational offerings, we have webinars. We're a nonprofit. So we, you know, I feel like the education is very reasonably priced in general, but even the network that has grown, or, you know, if I have a, I had a, for instance, one time, a pediatric neurologist from Houston. I'm about 3 hours from Houston. She called and she said, I need to know what you did for this little girl. She's like so much better. And I was like, please come be a part of ILADS. Please come learn how to treat these kids. And it takes a long time, and it takes a lot of careful consideration. It doesn't fit into a quick office visit at all, which is another reason it doesn't easily fit into the kind of the typical current medical model. But if one doctor at a time, each of us who does know something can start to collaborate. I mean, I don't know everything by any means, and I never will. I just want to learn more all the time. And then trying to figure things out it keeps our jobs interesting. It keeps us from burning out. You know, it's kind of hard to squeeze it into the usual medical model where there's a high expectation of a doctor to see a lot of people in a day. But then if that person really is interested in this type of work and helping people get back on their feet or back, you know, to feeling better, I just encourage them. Like, there are, like, my office would hire them right now. Wow. I would hire another doctor. If I found the right doctor with the right heart, even if they didn't know what to do, I would love to have them there and just teach them how to help people. And then, you know, one at a time, another doctor, another NP, another naturopath, like another doctor. So,
yeah. And I think that that's huge that, you know, we kind of go back to that toolbox. What tools do we have in our toolbox? And I think collaborating with different doctors, right, and pulling people in and networking with one another, that is, I think, the best way to get the best information out there and the best help, right? Because nobody can know it all. You know, it's kind of like technology, it changes every day, right? Like, who has time to keep up with all of that and with all the new findings that they do and all the new studies? Like, we just need, and then because Lyme can be so complex, right? Because it's not, we don't all have the same symptoms. We don't all treat the same way. And so I think networking together is fantastic. So if any of the listeners out there right now are, you know, just trying to start navigating down this road, like, ILADS is an amazing resource to go in and, you know, get doctor referrals. And it sounds like you guys kind of screen them pretty well, which is good. You know, I never totally deter people from doing traditional medicines and antibiotics when they get diagnosed. Like, there's a time and place, right? Mm-hmm. You get a fresh bite, you know, you got a bullseye rash, you whatever it is. Yeah, let's try the 6-8 weeks of doxycycline. Perfect. But my thoughts beyond that are, if you're chronic Lyme, antibiotics, I don't think, should be your first choice. I think that there's a lot of holistic things out there, lots of herbal protocols from, you know, many great doctors, Dr., you know, Rawls, the Cowden protocol, you know, just so many things out there. But ILADS is going to be a great resource to kind of get you started. What's going on? What is this? I need help. And so, yes. And then if there's any doctors out there listening, you know, reach out, because we need more of you.
I think you're right on the fact that we have to individualize what we do for each patient. So I have, once in a while, I'll have a patient that's only been on herbs for 4 or 5 years, and some things are better, some things are not. You know, they've been trying to run their own protocol, which I totally understand why they would want to. And I will give them antibiotics and it makes a huge difference. So it's funny, patients will say to me, like, you always do antibiotics, or you always treat mold first, or you always this. And I'm like, I don't always do anything.
Yeah.
Like I want to know, what have you already done? How did you respond? Also, even before those questions, I want to know, what happened to you? You know, were you born with problems? Were you healthy until a certain age? And then, you know, the history is probably where I spend a lot of time on asking, you know, about the what happened questions, because that's where really a lot of times the good stuff is. Like, if I know really what happened to someone, it can prioritize the differential diagnosis more quickly to get a little bit more exact on what's probably happening to that patient. So I like that you see these trends.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's not, you know, a lot of times, like you said, like we're born like, oh my gosh, when I was a kid, I was always sick, or I always had that, you know, and it's not just Lyme. It's not just the co-infections. I mean, I call it like the, you know, that's why my podcast is Lyme and Beyond, because it's so many other things that kind of go into like this Lyme umbrella, right? You know, you got the parasites, the mold, MCAS, PANS, PANDAS, like just so many things, like too many to list. And it's not, so to say, Lyme disease, right? But it all falls under that. And you have to treat the symptoms of the patient, not just let's treat Lyme, you know, because that's not the way it is. And it's not the way it is with every individual person. And, you know, I hear from a lot of patients, they're like, you know, I've been treating for a couple years and, you know, the needle's really not moving. You know, there's a lot of questions, you know, what's your diet like, right? Like what's your lifestyle is one that I always go to. But then have you, first of all, tested for mold, right? Test or treat mold. And then I also even tell them, don't even test for parasites, because I personally don't think there's anything that's accurate for parasites out there. But treat parasites, right? And so I've been well, and I will do a parasite cleanse a couple times a year for the rest of my life. Why? Because I don't want them creatures in my body, right? And I want to stay healthy. And so it's not always a fun topic. But when I talk to these people, they're like, no, I've never tested for mold, or I don't have parasites. I'm like, who are these doctors? You know what I mean? Again, tools in the toolbox. I get it. So that's why I do what I do, right? So I have this platform so we can talk about all the stuff and get all the information.
That's really good. And I do think patients have to advocate for themselves. And I really think it's the patients that are going to make things make forward progress over time. I mean, we doctors want to, and those of us who see these things and follow the trend and the responses to different therapies. Like, I mean, I think that's what we were designed to do. I don't think we were designed to just robotically apply a prescription to each symptom. And I'm not saying that's what all doctors do, but that's what I was kind of doing, honestly, before I started going back to school, is if someone couldn't sleep, I would give them a medication for insomnia. I didn't really have the time or even necessarily like the skill set to say, well, let's talk about when this started and what was happening and
be curious, right? Like be curious, ask questions of why. And yes, we do need to for sure be our own advocates. And I guarantee you all the listeners can agree with that one. But yeah, we want our doctors to be curious and ask questions and kind of get to the foundational of like who we are, what is our body, what's going on in there, because we don't just want to fix this. We want to know why it's happening, right? Like I always say to people that if you're having a symptom, there's a reason why. Your body is telling you something. Something is off. Something is not working right. Something you're taking maybe is causing, like there's a reason, right? So don't just mask it with a pill, like you said, like the, you know, you can't sleep, let me have a sleeping pill. And that's, you know, a lot of the rut that we kind of get stuck in when we're out there researching and trying to get treated for this, because we need to build the foundation. We need to, you know, gather all the information so we can provide a toolbox to this patient.
Yeah, it's interesting when I was doing, I got my master's in integrative medicine a few years back now. And when I was writing a paper for that curriculum, one of the papers I had to write is how do we serve multiple generations in this environment? Because and I said this on another podcast because I just think it's really interesting too. We have baby boomers now that, and of course these are generalizations, but most of them, they don't want a lot of explanation. They want you to write their prescriptions. This is really because probably what they're used to. But when they go to the doctor, they want their prescriptions refilled. If you're changing something, they want you to tell them such. And then they want to visit a little bit about, you know, their life or their grandkids, or if they're hurting, they want to tell you what's, you know, what's bothering them. But they don't tend to be, as a group, very interested in all the explanations versus I'm actually about to turn 55. So I'm a Gen Xer, and we Gen Xers, when I first read this, when I was writing this paper, as I was researching for it, we like to go to the doctor with a stack of our own research and get and teach the doctor what we know and try to get a buy-in and, you know, formulate a plan together. And that just cracked me up because it's so true. And then the generation immediately below us, they don't want to go to the doctor at all in person. They want to look it up on the internet, apply what they find. If that doesn't work, then they want to do like a virtual visit. And they do have curiosity and questions for sure. But, you know, and of course there are exceptions in all of those groups, but it's just funny to serve all different ages of patients. And then, of course, like I do tend to get quite a few pediatric patients who are really complicated, who can barely leave their houses, and you know, how to handle those kind of situations too. So many people are suffering so much, and the public doesn't know it unless they're immediately involved, because those families don't get to leave their houses. Yeah. So it's and they want to be private because it's poorly understood. I mean, I do think a lot of that has some background infection, active infection and toxicities. And, you know, it's usually multifactorial. It's not usually as simple as saying it's one problem, yeah. But,
and when
helping those families feels like a calling too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I kind of chuckled when you were talking about the Gen X and all this. I'm so like in a box or in whatever world. I don't keep up on these things, right? And so I just recently learned about these generations and they're this Gen X and all of that. So I'm in the same category as you, as I'll be 53 this week, actually. And so, I mean, I grew up in a traditional household, right? We get sick, we go to the doctor, we take the pills that the doctor gives us, we go home and we get better. Like we don't second guess anything. And I've always been that way. But until I got sick, right? And for 7 years I did this, and I kept believing these doctors, and now I'm convinced that it's in my head and all these things. And I think that in my generation, I guess I feel like we trust so much one person more so than we trust ourselves. And we trust how our body is, right? Like going through this 13-year Lyme journey that I did, I am so in tune with my body, right? I am so in touch with it. I never would have dreamed of it, right? I never would have dreamed of doing a colonics or a coffee enema. Like, who are you and what are you talking about? You know what I mean? Just the crazy stuff, because that wasn't how I was raised. I was forced to leave that type of treatment because I wasn't getting anywhere, right? I really felt like I was going to die. And so, but then they tell you too, you know, so then you say the other generation below us, they go Google, let's Google it, right? And I mean, for the most part, if you Google your symptom, like you're probably dying, you have this, you have that. So I always say, don't Google, right? But I mean, it truly kind of boils down to, we need to be our own advocate. And, you know, I've said this to the listeners over the years. If you're with a doctor, you're doing traditional stuff, you're not noticing changes, you're not seeing that needle move, think outside the box, right? Look, do your research, reach out to doctors through ILADS, and there's other options out there, right? Like, if it's not working, you need to change things up. And so just be open to the idea. I know it's crazy, but there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have done really voodoo type treatments, so to say, like what I call it, right? The treatments that I did, because I never did anything traditional for my Lyme journey, because at this point I had turned holistic in order to get my diagnosis. So just think outside the box, be more open to the day and age that we're in now, right? And all the amazing things that are out there. But again, antibiotics could be your thing and it may be your ticket. We just don't know because we're all so different.
So true. And I think also I would, since I know patients are listening, I would ask patients to also know that those of us who are treating patients with these types of conditions, like we learn as we go too. Like if I look back 3 years or 5 years or 7 years, what I'm doing now is not the same. And so it's a, you know, people talk about their journey. I think there's even a journey from the doctor angle of starting to recognize patterns or see trends or see something new. Or, I mean, that's how we get better at our jobs, honestly, with experience, is just through listening and really trying to understand and then applying what we've seen, you know, along the way as a trend. I mean, it's the same thing that happens. I actually think that the traditional medical model was like this when I first entered it, with regard to things like high blood pressure or diabetes, you know, 25 plus years ago. I loved going into the doctor's lounge where a couple of doctors were having a conversation about a patient. That's where I learned so much, because they actually had the time to say, hey, did you see the patient in room 10? You know, there maybe one's a consultant and one's the primary doctor for that patient in the hospital. And then I would just listen to them talk it through, because the patient had some unique symptom or unique presentation, and together they would figure it out. And then, and I'm not picking on technology, but as technology became more and more a part of the whole system, those doctors were not having those conversations in, you know, they weren't sitting for a few minutes in the break room and talking about their patients. They were either doing their notes on a computer in a cubicle or doing it standing up, you know, at the nurse's station, and everything just got turned up into a hurry. Like,
That's exactly what I was just going to say. The world is in a hurry. We're in a hurry. We have minutes to meet with the doctor. They have minutes. They don't have time to sit in a break room and chat with their staff about things. And, you know, that's kind of the way of life, I guess, right? Like, we're constantly evolving. We're constantly, but we need to pivot a little bit too, you know? And so.
Well, and I've tried so many ways to think of what's the solution to the problem, because I don't want to be just complaining about that. I think technology's done amazing things too. And I think there are ways to use technology to our advantage. You know, I've tried to dabble a little bit, like in like shared medical visits, or, you know, maybe a model where I see the new patients and then I have help to see my patients for follow-up so I can see more new patients. I mean, this is a conversation I have frequently at my office, and I don't know the perfect answer for it, to be honest. We're always just trying to figure out how can we get more care to more people more quickly. And really, I do think the answer is through educating more people who have a heart for patients who are long suffering. And instead of seeing them as patients who just take a long time, or, you know, there's a little toolkit that was recently released that talked about how patients with chronic Lyme disease are emotionally draining. And I wanted to say, well, it's because they're emotionally drained. Like, they themselves have, you know, why do people do all the things they do? It's because they want to feel better. They don't, like, they're not just trying to do wild, non-traditional things. Like, they literally have suffered so much and haven't gotten the help they needed. So they would go to almost any length to try something to get them to feel better. And sometimes it does. So,
and I think,
you know, I think along we have to be partners that way.
Yeah. And along that topic too is, you know, yes, be open to everything. But I think, a lot of times, especially if it's been a long journey for us, we get our diagnosis, we really just want to kill it. We want to throw everything at it. Right. And I mean, there's some things I learned along my journey. There's some things I've learned after my journey, just being the advocate in the community that I have been for the last, you know, 7, 8 years. You need to find a protocol that you and your doctor agree upon, and you need to roll with it. You need to believe in it. You need to set your mind that this is what's going to move the needle for me, and you need to give it some time, right? Mm-hmm. Give it 4, 5, 6 months. Mm-hmm. If you are one of those people that every month you want to change, you want to add, you want to this, you want to do that, I can almost in every case promise you, you're taking so many more steps backwards than you are forwards, right? There's, yes, this saying that throw the kitchen sink at it, right? But there's a time and place. There's kind of, you know, it's important what comes first and what comes next. And you've got to trust the process. That's why you have to, you know, be in touch with your body, be in tune with your body, resonate with your doctor so that you guys can get this game plan and then stick with it. If it's not working several months down the road, let's regather, right? Let's renegotiate. What are we going to do? Why isn't it working? What's changing? What are my new symptoms? And figure out a new protocol, right? Like, I'm assuming you can kind of agree with that, right? People, they get so desperate. They just want to, they're like, oh, well, I heard so-and-so did this. I heard so-and-so. No, you found a plan. Stay on your path for now.
I try to talk to them about that early on when we're establishing a relationship, because I do think that sometimes I'll use this analogy. I'll say, you've been driving the car long enough. Like, let me drive, but you keep riding beside me and I want you involved in where we're going, you know, but you don't have to drive the car anymore, because that is very true. Because if you do get on the internet, there are literally hundreds of new protocols and new products and herbals and nutraceuticals and devices that, you know, I hear about them all the time from patients who have either tried them or trying them or thinking about trying them. And so I try to just think through, does that make sense for them to add that? Or is that just one more thing? Or, you know, like you said, how long have you been on what you're on? Has it changed anything? I think it's very challenging for people to track their progress. I use a little inflammation score tracker that I made that really just kind of looks at the top 5 symptoms so we can monitor it, because most of us tend as humans to remember our last bad headache or our last, you know, that yesterday we had a rough day. And the trend, if it's becoming less and less frequent, means we're on the right path. So I like to, if I can get people to do that, I do. I also very much encourage my patients to lean on the people that love them, which is, you know, sometimes really hard, but let the person that loves you the most, who is close to you, fill your pill box and check on you and help you, because if you have that help and that support, you're just so much more likely to be able to be consistent and stay on a protocol. I think a lot of it is, when someone doesn't feel well, this is what I've been told by so many people. When someone doesn't feel well, they just don't remember to refill one of the therapies they're on, or they don't remember to fill their pill box, or they just were so tired they didn't take their medicine that day, or they didn't take their supplements, or they didn't take their herbs, and then they get off track, and then it kind of, you know, loses momentum. And like you said, that's sort of a step backwards. If you don't persist and kind of stay consistent, like, it's hard to make progress for sure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, a lot of us have line brains. So our brains aren't thinking properly. And I know, you know, during my journey, like, it's a full-time job treating this, right? Like, my alarm was going off on my phone, you know, every so many hours to take this and do this drop and, you know, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, absolutely. Lean on your loved ones. If they're willing to help, I know it's hard sometimes, but if we can just conserve some of our energy, right, that's going to allow our bodies to help us detox itself and stuff like that. And I love that you mentioned, you know, tracking things. So during my journey, my tracking was Post-it notes all over my home, right? So first of all, I had a Post-it note on my bathroom mirror that said, brush my teeth. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing. It sounds crazy, but, you know, and I would track things, and I would try to figure out, okay, well, I had really bad headaches today. Did I do a new treatment? Did I eat something different? Like, it's a lot to track it, right? And
for sure.
During my after my journey, about 5 years ago, I met a gentleman online. His name's JP Davitt. And him and I become really good friends. We've worked together in the Lyme community over the last 4.5 years. And he created this app. It's called crowdcuring.com. And it is a tracking. And so him and I have kind of been working and bouncing ideas off of each other's for the last 4 years. He's got it launched now. And it truly is like an online dating for Lyme disease. You create a profile. You put in your symptoms. You put in the protocols you've done. Did they work or did they not work? And then at the end of the day, you can hit the print button and take those notes to your doctor. So instead of you trying to remember, what do I want to tell the doctor? You know, the doctor, like we just talked, they don't have time for this, right? They don't have a ton of time. So it's a free app you can download. Again, it's called crowdcuring.com. It's really fantastic. It's a little bit limited now as we're just kind of getting it going, right? We need more people to log on there, create your free account, hit the search button, back pain, different profiles will pop up who had back pain. What did they do? Did it work? You know, just give you more ideas, just a networking, so to say, of that. But yes, health tracking your symptoms, your all of that stuff is so, so important. And if we don't write it down that day, we don't remember it the next, right?
Did you see me? I just wrote it down right now.
Good job. You learned, you know. But yeah, it really is. Health tracking is logging, you know, like a diary, whatever you want to call it. It just is. It's huge. It's important. And I love the whole aspect that you can actually just print it and take it to your doctor. Like everything's there. There's no post-it notes all over your house. Seriously, like I probably owned stock in post-it notes back in the day because that was my way of tracking. I didn't know anything else. So there's so many more incredible tools nowadays, right? With, like you said, technology and just other things, just more people coming out about Lyme, more diagnoses about Lyme, more doctors that are learning about Lyme and how to treat things. And so we're constantly evolving in that way. And I think that that is what's going to continue to help this community.
Well, that's great. Well, in iLads is actually trying to launch something internally. We've been calling it the Big Data Project, which is a clinically centered research project where it would probably be multiple ILADS doctors, just because it wouldn't be restricted to ILADS doctors. It would be any doctor that wanted to put data in about their patients and be able to track those patients. And we've been raising funds for that for a little while. We had a lead donor gift that was very generous. And we will continue to raise funds for that. Once we have enough to get it accomplished, I think that will be something that can be published, which can, you know, unfortunately, there's been for so long just the pattern of establishing data for doctors is through the kind of the grade system, where if it's a double-blinded, placebo-controlled, randomized clinical trial, it's considered the strongest level of evidence in medicine.
For sure.
Which, you know, that's important and that's good. It's just that the only entities that could really afford to do those kinds of studies are largely pharmaceutical companies. And, you know, we need that kind of data too, but this would be less centralized. I mean, when I worked in pharmaceutical research for a few years before I went to medical school, and it is somewhat decentralized where they will gather data from multiple centers, but then it's still randomized and placebo controlled and in prospective, meaning the study is designed before the patients are enrolled on the study. This would be also prospective and it would be tracking the data, but it would be more of a study to look at what symptoms did the patient present with, what were the patient's lab parameters, what testing was done, and then what interventions were used tracking that patient's progress and outcome. And so, you know, there's a lot to unpack in that, but we, you know, that's one of the ways that we do fundraise, or we are fundraising for that project. And we are having our 25th annual scientific conference in San Antonio in November. And we will have a dinner that anyone that wants to support some of those efforts can come to. It'll be a fundraising dinner where we'll have a live auction and things like that. Where, you know, that's kind of what iLADS is up to right now. We're kind of we want to continue medical education offerings. That's the core of what we do. In any way that we can.
Venturing out some too. Yeah, I love that.
But we're trying to do a little fundraising as well so that we can, you know, maybe launch this research project that we've wanted to do for a while. It's just, as you know, it just takes resources. So
yes. Time, resources, money, all of this stuff. Yeah. Well, we will for sure put all the information about that and the fundraiser coming up into the title of this episode. So people want to, people are around, they want to do it, they want to get involved. We'll have all the links in the title for it. So that is great information for sure. So, well, Dr. Offit, this has been amazing. I always love to chat with people about, you know, kind of where we started, why you do what you do. And I love that. I appreciate you as a Lyme patient, as just a person for stepping outside that box and being curious, right, and wanting to add to your toolbox, because you type of people are really valuable to the Lyme community and then just to the world in general, right? Like, we are constantly needing to keep up with the times and evolving. And so you're like just a true picture perfect of exactly what we need for that. We don't have all the answers. We never will. But when we collaborate together, think outside the box and want to, you know, make our toolbox larger, like that's all we can expect. And that's all we can ask for people. And that's what you're doing. So I appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate you too for supporting people and advocating for people and for having me on. And like, really, you know, ILADS is a patient advocacy organization through the providing of medical education to doctors and other clinicians who want to treat these patients. So like, we're not technically patient advocates in that we're not a patient led organization, but everything we do is so we can take better care of our patients. So I love getting to collaborate with people who have a heart for that as well. And I hope that anybody that's listening will, you know, keep that in mind, that we're all allies, you know, in this.
Yeah, for sure. And so many of us that go through this journey and get to the other side, we just want to give back. Like, we don't want people to suffer. And so, you know, that's why it was just kind of my mission. I didn't hit that fork in the road. What do I do now? Like, God just kind of led me there. Like, this is what you're doing. I'm throwing all this in your lap. You're going to do it. And I love it. It fills my heart. It fills my soul, because I know this is a horrible disease. It's an isolating disease, whether you're surrounded by loved ones or not. We feel very alone. We feel unheard. And I want the listeners to know we hear you and what you're saying is true. And we can validate your feelings and your symptoms and that you're not alone and that there is life on the other side of this. I promise. Just stay vigilant, change that mindset. Know you're going to get well, and you will.
That was very beautifully said, Tanya. And I'm just really grateful that I had the chance to meet you today and get to speak with you.
Thank you so much. I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just gonna go to help to pay towards the studio cost.